From the lands of Grand Teutoburg City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of June, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Suzelow. He's at globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast. We'll do that with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions in Dackable. If you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week program, including our panelists, Arlen Suderman, Kurt Kimmel, and Greg Johnson. If not, it's up online right now in its entirety at willag.org, and many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn at $4.12¾, two lower for the day. December at $4.41½, a penny and a half lower. July beans down 1¼, $11.26¼ the settlement price. And November soybeans $11.56¼, ¾ cent lower. Bean meal futures down $1.20. The bean oil 49¢ higher. Wheat futures soft red in the July contract, 12¾ lower, finished at $5.78¼, and the hard red July at $6.11, down 9½¢. Live cattle futures $1.40 lower for the day. Feeder cattle off $3.45, and lean hogs down just 2½¢ on the afternoon. Crude oil down $2.65 a barrel. Mike Zuzelow, globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Mike. Thanks for joining us again on a Friday.
Great to be with you. Happy Friday, Todd.
Happy Friday to you as well. A little rainfall here. Cool for us today. We're supposed to get hot, humid next week. Have you started to go that way in your part of the world just yet?
Yeah, the humidity's coming up. We too, have been under some rain showers, and the World Cup match was a little bit soggy on Thursday night, and that's about an hour south of us in Kansas City. So we've had some good rains. A lot of people that I've talked to on both sides of the Corn Belt actually would welcome some warmer, drier weather at this point, unless you were in Nebraska and had gotten mist most of May and early June. But even southeast Nebraska and the eastern half of Nebraska, that area would love to see a little bit more of a hotter, drier bias to give that corn a chance to green up and get a little bit bigger.
I have to ask a question about the soccer matches or football, because Arlen Suderman was on yesterday for Commodity Week. Those who can stay with us for the whole hour will hear all of that program. And I did ask Arlen, because he's in Kansas City, if he had gone to, I didn't think matches, because those are really, those are expensive tickets, but I wondered whether he'd gone to any of the bars just to be there to watch. Have you taken any of that in at all?
No, I sure haven't, but it's interesting you ask, because on Juneteenth, we went down to the Tall Grass Prairie, and I wanted to see the big cattle ranch down there from the Jones family that surrounds the Tall Grass Prairie, which is a national preserve, and we were looking at the bison, and five guys from Argentina came up behind us, and we started talking with them. So it got pretty funny pretty fast.
Well, it is fantastic that sport can draw us all together. It really can. Okay, so back to at hand, the marketplace. It's been an interesting week. Next week, we have USDA's crop acreage and grain stocks report. Both of them could throw a wrench into the market, either for the good or the bad, either one. What are you thinking?
Well, I think this is where, between the delivery on Monday for July futures, the acreage report, the stocks report, the European weather, the United States weather, we should have a pretty good handle on supply-demand fundamentals. And I want to see whether that turns the heads of the investment community, because I feel very strongly with the European corn price, $2.50 premium in Paris, France versus the CME in Chicago, that this market has still been driven by the funds and not the fundamentals. And in the fundamentals that it's been driven by has been the macro fundamentals of the currencies, the yen at near a 40-year low, not the fact that the U.S. Crude oil inventories this week showed that they were at the lowest in 41 years since the mid-1980s. One of the things that really stood out to me on Friday especially and earlier this week with the wheat market, Todd, was not only the heat that we were seeing in Europe and talk of losing a lot of crop and potentially a third of the corn crop based upon the ag ministry, but in the wheat specifically, we did not see that translate into a Friday rally after Thursday's move up. And I think it's a lot of the reason was because the Russian ruble had lost 7.5% this week against the dollar. And that was directly related to lifting the Iran oil sanctions and also directly related to, I think, the Ukrainians being so effective in taking out the Russian oil deep in their country. And so the ruble's really been under attack by the speculators. And I think it's translated into a weaker grain market. But that's kind of where I'm at with the clients right now, is that if I'm right about the funds versus the fundamentals, this next 10 days is going to give me enough supply-demand fundamentals that I hope it turns the heads of the investors. And if it does, they should want a short cover, I think.
Are you worried in the wheat market? And we've had 5 of the last 6 days have been lower. Thursday, as you mentioned, was the higher day in that. And we're only, what, 8 cents or something like that above the contract low for the July soft red winter wheat going in to expiration. How worried are you about that marketplace?
Well, that's exactly where I'm at. I mean, the wheat and the crude was the major linkage to lead us higher until May 15th. As I see it, that U.S.-China trade disappointment initiated the top, but it didn't explain why we went down and why we're 100% retracement now and filling gaps in the weekly corn chart this week and about 70 cents away from filling the gap in the WTI from when we initially launched. That, I think, was more due to the U.S. dollar, the Federal Reserve Chairman, the Secretary of Treasury going after an increase in dollar invoicing and really wanting a stronger dollar in some of his comments this past week or two. This is the issue that I have to face, is if we don't have a bad crop here in the United States, I can't rely upon global El Nino to give us higher prices in the July time period. So that's really the issue, is if the crude and the wheat don't make the lows by the time we get to like the 10th of July, then I'm going to have to get a lot more defensive with what I do.
If they do make the lows, and I'm thinking about both corn and wheat because on both of those, they have made contract highs in May, contract lows in the month of June. If we make, I guess, a new low or a low of some sort in wheat, how much upside potential does it have?
I think that the stocks numbers, because the world stocks to use and the U.S. stocks to use in both wheat and corn are lower than they were a year ago. I would say a model year that I'm looking at, and this goes to corn, with the wheat supporting, because the corn has been attached to the hip of the wheat for the most of 2026. But the 2010 year time period is the model year I'm looking at, Todd, where we made a low at the end of June when we had the grain stocks and acreage numbers update. And this would be especially if we gained some bean acres and lost some corn acres next week. But we essentially went from a low of about, 350 in Dease corn at the end of June, all the way up to about 550, 570 by the time we got to the early part of November. It was a very strong turn to the upside, and that would be directly contrary to what we've witnessed, where we've been trading almost identical to the last 2 years, where we didn't make a low in Dease corn until the early part of August. And then had a retracement. The 2010 market would be a true trend reversal and complete move higher. But again, that would be in that early July time period.
What would precipitate that? A lack of precipitation, I suppose, is one of the things, but.
Well, yeah, this is where it really does have to be, in my mind, if my analysis is right. It's got to be wheat, it's got to be crude, and therefore it's got to be the dollar. This is where the dollar has gone to a 13-month high out of nowhere, essentially. And that's really the key to why we're where we're at right now, if you ask me, especially given the type of, I mean, we're talking about 111, 112 degree temperatures in Europe this week, and the wheat's not going to even close higher on the week on that. So it would be, to me, to be able to make that kind of a shift, have to be the dollar and the crude oil and the wheat doing that kind of a move to make that corn change like that.
What would cause the dollar to weaken?
I think the resumption of the Trump administration and the resumption of The Iran conflict. I mean, we've seen a 7-month low in gold that's been directly related to the strength in the dollar. And we've seen this break apart of the crude oil and the dollar. They're moving opposite one another like they used to do traditionally up until when we became a big exporter. So I think you unwind, or essentially the funds reload what they did back in the springtime as far as strong crude oil, strong wheat, weaker dollar.
So something happens in the Middle East, maybe Ukraine, that it really ignites war someplace then.
Yeah, we just don't know. It's like I'm almost ready to go to compliance and say, can we change commodity futures involves the risk of loss to the risk of sanity? I mean, you don't know what it's going to be, what exactly it is going to be. You just watch for those types of trends to develop, led by some of these key factors.
Mike, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thanks for having me, buddy. Have a good weekend.
You too. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's turn our attention now to the weather across the Corn Belt. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Another rainy day, kind of cool as well. We'll talk more about the heat this coming next week, but I do want to discuss the month of June with you, Eric, as we wrap it up. It seemed as if it was not too terribly bad. How did the stats round out?
Well, I mean, some places have picked up several inches of rain. There's a spot north of Galesburg that's grabbed a foot of rain. We've got places across the central and northern part of the state that just saw a tremendous amount of moisture. And as a result, we've been knocked off the drought monitor. We've now got in places excess, flooding. It's been very problematic for a lot of different locations. But I think before I get into maybe some of the impacts of that, we got to talk about the severe weather aspect of this, because right now Illinois leads the country. We've had nearly 200 reports of tornadoes. I think we're almost like four times what Texas has seen so far this year. And so this has been an incredibly active spring. And it just brings up some important research. I've been sharing this research results since, the year 2021, I think. And it was research done by Victor Cassini, who's up at Northern Illinois University. And Jeff Trapp at the University of Illinois has been doing research on basically if tornado alleys shifting and moving. And they complemented the work of Harold Brooks, all three of which are all Illinois folks. And what we found is that, tornado alleys shifting, to the east over time. And so it's not uncommon for us to have these severe weather events. But my goodness, has the severe weather been bad in the state. Now, other impact. The rain. Been looking at some of the potential disease pressure out of all of this rain, and because it's not only wet here, but much wetter to our south, we are looking at possibly a very high year in terms, I guess I'd say more vulnerable year for high disease pressure as we go into the month of July, simply because of the way things have shaped up to our south, allowing certain fungus, and bacteria and all sorts of different things to kind of thrive. And they're getting pushed farther to the north with time. So Todd, there's a whole host of things that June did. And the one thing it didn't do was keep drought around here. Kept the drought way over in parts of Iowa. That's where we're worried right now about places being too dry.
I know where I am worried. It is a bit about next week because of the heat. Of course, all of the rain moisture in the ground across much of the Corn Belt has been very helpful and will be very helpful as we head into 90-degree days. It's the overnight lows that seem like they could be an issue, though.
Yes, I'm so glad you brought that up, because during the day when the sun is just pounding on the ground, if you've got soil moisture and you've got moisture in the crop, 50% of the sun's energy will be used to evaporate that, the other 50% being used to heat things. So in other words, had we been talking about June drought up to this point, then this heat wave that's coming through would have been exponentially worse in terms of the crop conditions. Now, the way we see this, though, is it's got a really cool historical story to what's going on. So I'm going to tell it to you real quick, all right? If you were to ever have taken courses with me at the University of Illinois, you would have learned about a man named Carl Gustav Rossby. So he is one of the founding fathers of understanding how atmospheric dynamics work. And what he taught us is that the jet stream moves in waves. Now, we all know this now because we can see it. Like, we have computer models, and you can see it on the nightly news. And you and I talk about it. Andrew talks about it. It's a common thing. But back then, when he discovered this, we didn't understand that. and he found a very specific number. Okay, so here it is. If the wave between a ridge crest and another ridge crest is about, I don't know, about 4,500 kilometers, the wave tends to balance its forward speed with the advection of planetary vorticity. And most people listening right now are going, what just happened on this little radio interview? Where are we going? Okay, all that means is the wave doesn't move. It's like a standing wave. So Todd, here it is. That means we're going to keep the heat around here for at least halfway through the month of July. And that could be problematic because the overnight lows are going to be high with this as well, well into the low to mid 70s.
Okay. So if it's standing still, it's just going to stay put.
That's right.
Do we see a time where it moves?
Well, the thing about a standing wave, Todd, and especially where we are, we could end up seeing a lot of what we call ridge riding thunderstorms. So it's going to be hot, but we could, with all the excess moisture in the ground, be able to kick off daily convective events and storm on the crop. But it's not widespread rain. It's hyper-local squall lines that come through and deliver storms. And those folks that get them, they cool down, they get the moisture, their crop does better. I'm mostly worried, honestly, about Missouri, Kansas, parts of Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma. That is the region where the epicenter of this ridge could stand. And as a result, that could go over really hot and really dry very, very quickly.
Okay, so in some years in the past, we have always talked about this as an oscillation and kind of the standing high, but it moves a little bit from maybe the four corners to the west, and we get hot, or we have the ridge riders, and then it moves back. Yeah. Is that the same function
we're talking
about?
It's the same thing.
Okay.
It's the same thing. I just need it. It's going to be in, maybe it's going to be closer to Missouri than it is going to be to the four corners. What we want, I mean, to be honest with you, is we want it to elongate and, as you said, stretch to the four corners. Now, of course, nobody in the four corners wants that, but it works out better for us in terms of getting those storms. So the forecast is a bit fragile right now, Todd, and I think it's going to be important to see how long the water we have in the soil is going to last as a reserve going into a heat wave that's going to take us well past the 4th of July. I think the big call will be on the 9th, 10th, or 11th of the month. Does the wave still stand in the same place it's developing here in the near term?
So not next week, but the following one then.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible and helped us to wrap up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen at WILLAG.org.